Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Dr. Art Kaplan, we go way back. I knew him back when. We knew each other back in the day from your Philadelphia days. I'm so thrilled that you're here with me this morning, Dr. Art Kaplan, even though you've left us basically to be a biggity big, heading the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU at the Grossman Ooh. School there. But Dr. Art Kaplan, thanks for being here.
Well, you know, Dawn, I haven't really left you. I got tons of family in Delran and Cherry Hill, and my son lives in Philly. So I'm down there. I know what's going on in Philly. And by the way, we do go so far back. I guess you were about 11 at that time.
That's my story, and I'm sticking with it. Yeah. So let's get to it as we think about bioethics. And I love this conversation because there's so much that we can talk about. Obviously, we know your history with COVID, and we really have to restore our trust in our institutions. But nowadays we have so and by the way, as we're speaking, Dr. Oz preparing right to go before a finance committee. As we have Dr. Oz, we have Maha, we have a legal weed that we could talk about. Blueberry farms in New Jersey. I'm getting questions from people. They're DMing me and texting me. Ask him about the Chinese controlling the blueberries. Why do they? So you have an array of things that we can talk about here, from blueberries to making the legalization of weed to COVID. So let's begin with COVID.
And by the way, people with long memories, just about to the day, do you remember the name Terry Schiavo and the controversy?
Oh, my gosh.
This is the 20th anniversary this month when she died, or was allowed to die, I should say. But that case, for those who don't remember, a big battle about the right to withdraw food and water feeding tubes from a permanently unconscious person, it still reverberates down to this day. There are still families who encounter those challenges, and both in Jersey and Pennsylvania, and if you will, the Schiavo case was really the trigger that set off a lot of discussion, right up to including, as New Jersey has now, assisted aid in dying by the doctor. So that's a whole other area.
Yeah, and that was her. That was 1990. Just to refresh, 26-year-old Terry Schiavo. She was in a vegetative state after suffering cardiac arrest. Her parents just wanted to be the caregivers. They felt that she, their parents, and so they're being parents. And but it was her husband, right, who had your spouse has that legal right, and there was just a heartbreaking battle.
Yeah, it was a clash between Michael Schiavo, the husband, Bobby Schindler, her brother, and the parents. Oh, by the way, Pennsylvania folks on that side of the family. And she had a heart attack and wound up in a permanent coma. The brother and the parents said, "We want her to get every treatment possible. Don't let her die." The husband had said, "She wouldn't want to be this way. She can't feel, sense, think. She's just got a heartbeat and breathing, but nothing more. And I know her best. You have to honor her wishes as I understand them, and let her die." It took, from 1990 to 2005, court fights, 14 in Florida. There were 5 federal courts. It went to the U.S. Congress, Bill Frist, even the guy who just got turned down, David Weldon, as the CDC director, tried to fight for the parents and passed a special law that you couldn't stop treatment for Terry Schiavo. Ultimately, the Supreme Court at that time said you could, and the husband, if you will, got custody, got the right to pull tubes, and that's why she died this month, 20 years ago.
God. It was heartbreak. It's you know, quite frankly, it's why you have to meet with your advisor and have the conversation. And I'll just full disclosure, this is probably too much information, Dr. Art Kaplan. But my husband and I, when we had that conversation, you know my husband, Larry Menti, and I said, hey, if something
happens.
By the
way, I know him because he's big timing it up here with me in New York.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
And so, but we all knew each other from, you know, way back when. But Larry says, don't you ever pull the plug on me.
Yeah.
That's what, and I was like, look, I'm good. I'm good with God. Don't let anybody photograph me like that, first of all, because you know me. But I was like, pull the plug. I'm good. I'm going to a better place. My faith is good. And I know. But my husband is that person who said, don't you ever pull the plug on me.
So
it's important.
Just for help to listeners, first and foremost, decide who you want to speak for you. If Larry wants you, great. If Larry said, well, I'm not sure I want you, I want X, because I think they'll be able to carry out my wishes and keep me going or whatever, you must have a family discussion. And don't just pick them privately in the backyard. Let everybody in the family know, in my business, the biggest fights that I have to mediate that break out are among family members who say, I'm in charge. No, you're in charge. No, it's sister. No, it's brother. It's whatever. Pick the person and let everybody else know this is the person who's going to make decisions if I'm unable to do so. If you're able to do so, then you say what you want. But if you get in that situation like Terry Schiavo, we can't speak and you're not communicating, who is it that the doctor should turn to? You have to make that clear among family and friends. By the way, if you're just living with somebody, they don't have any legal status. If you're gay in a lot of states and you have a partner, they don't. So you've got to write it down and say, I want X. Because you wouldn't be able to defend that, if you will, if it got challenged. The other thing I'm going to say, you can fill out what's called a living will or an advance directive, and that's fine, and put what you just said, Dawn, you know, I'm ready. But you have to say, if I can't benefit anymore, or if I can't speak or communicate or sense, in other words, give them some guidance. Don't just say, well, when the time comes, let me go. That's too vague. Yeah. Too vague.
Yes. Have to give those details.
Yeah. A little bit more.
So as we look at, you know, and I know that you've talked a lot recently about legalized weed. It's something that our governor, Josh Shapiro, here in Pennsylvania, has said that our neighbors do this. And so as far as recreational marijuana, it's something that everybody's doing. Why not take advantage of that, tax it, and spend the money well? And so what do you make of all of this with marijuana? I know that you, as a bioethicist in the medical field, but you've studied the history in our nation of this issue.
Yeah, well, marijuana certainly did get a bad rap. It was seen as equivalent to heroin, as equivalent to morphine, as equivalent to addictive drugs. It was a Schedule I federal drug, and it still is. And that, I think, is wrong. It doesn't belong in the same category as these other highly addictive, abused drugs. So decriminalizing that, I think the federal government should be doing that. Trump actually said at one point he was going to do this. I haven't heard any more about it. He didn't do it in his first administration, but I think that's overdue. In terms of states and regulating it locally, yeah, it's fine. Let's take out the, you know, jail terms, and I think taxing marijuana makes some sense, and even growing it under, you know, controlled conditions. There's a lot of marijuana out there that gets spiked with everything from, you know, who knows what to fentanyl.
Yeah.
Dangerous. So having controlled product is very important. But there are three things to say about this, Dawn. One, when you shift in states to legalize, and some states have, you're making a much more potent marijuana because you're not having dealers out there cutting it and, if you will, knocking down the ability to get you high. You have to be careful with the stuff that comes out of the regulated, you know, growing area when the state is growing it. They're making it pure. They're making it better. So that's a problem. Secondly, you got to come up with laws. What does it mean to be impaired while driving under marijuana? You know what? No state has answered that. That's not good. You don't want people driving buses high or operating, you know, SEPTA or who knows. So we need some regulation and law that says here's where you shouldn't be doing it. I guess I'm talking about the old don't operate heavy machinery under the influence kind of thing. We need that here. The last thing is we don't really understand what's influences on kids. Mm-hmm. How much can you use? If you don't think kids are using in states where it's become legal, you're naive.
Yeah.
So you got 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds. Yep. They're smoking six times a day, big blunts of pure marijuana. Well, that's a problem, and that has to be looked into, too. So it's not just it's either legal or it isn't. My point of view is you got some, if you will, you got public policy that you got to put into place to regulate and shape it. We do it in alcohol, right? You're liable. If you're a drunk driver for harm, the bartender who serves you, if he thinks or she thinks you're drunk, could get liability. So it's that kind of thing that has to come into the marijuana area.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
And then the way that it's done. So if you're smoking it, smoking anything, not great for you. I think that the, you know, we hear about these marijuana, like the cart, it's basically vaping it.
Yeah.
And the health impact then in your lungs. I mean, there's a lot that we can take apart here, but a lot of it is just, there's not a lot of education or awareness on a, is there, I guess I ask you this, is there a healthier way to, as, wasn't it Rosie back in the day when she was funny and she would say things like, my mom says, are you doing the pot? You know, so is there a healthier way to do the pot?
Well, I think, as with all things, you got to do it in moderation. If you're Bob Marley and you're smoking 10 blunts a day that are, you know, 2 feet long, I think you got a problem even addiction-wise, even in terms of potentially losing some mental acuity. Now, most of the users are not doing that. They're using it like they would the glass of wine at the end of the day sort of thing. But we shouldn't give up studies. We should still do research on this because, again, it's one thing to say, well, it's out there and it's available, but we don't know what it does to a person who smokes it who has asthma. We don't know what it does to a person who smokes it who might have other diseases like heart disease, congestive heart failure. People use it, you know, partly medicinally, and I'm not saying that's wrong, but I'm just saying we don't know the side effects because we've never really studied the drug. Why haven't we studied the drug? Because if it's a Schedule I drug, researchers couldn't get their hands on it to study it. How ironic is that?
Yeah.
So we jumped, if you will, from it's completely prohibited, it's banned, nobody can use it, it's just like heroin, and no, you can't study its impact, to, oh, okay, it's recreationally available,
yes,
and anybody can do what they want. That's a pretty big jump.
And so as far as COVID, MAHA, I know that Dr. Mehmet Oz facing the Senate hearing today over his nomination to lead Medicare, huge agency.
I mean, I'm just going to jump in, by the way, on Oz. I haven't been a huge fan. I know him slightly. He's a very legit doctor and a good surgeon. He works up here at Columbia University in the surgery department, and I know his colleagues, and they like him, and they think he's a, you know, he knows his medicine. At the same time, when he had the TV show all those years, he did tout a lot of junk. I mean, just ridiculous stuff. By the way, blueberries. He was always touting blueberries as a cure for everything. Chinese controlled or not, I don't know. But he was in love with them, and that was just silly. And he had products that he had an interest in that he was pushing on the show, and he didn't tell you. So there were always conflict of interest things there with different herbs and stuff that he was promoting. So I often was critical of him. I think he's going to go in. He's not going to fail to be appointed, but I hope that they demand that he divest himself of all of his holdings and ownership in healthcare products, healthcare companies. By the way, you remember he pushed Medicare Advantage?
Mm-hmm.
He had links to those companies. You can't do that and do the job that they want him to do. You got to dump all those connections. That's what I'm watching for.
Yeah, and what, you know, I always say that we talk about transparency, so I just want transparency now and forever in government. Could we all just agree on that and then put it in there,
I mean, I think
right?
that's, I agree with you. That's kind of the minimum, and then, you know, when you get transparency, then you can make decisions. I'm going to go to this doctor, I'm going to take this pill, or I'm not. But it's kind of left these days a little bit in the fog about who's connected to what, and it shouldn't be that way.
So when we talk about COVID restoring faith in our institutions, so when you talk about that, when we have the discussion, what do we need to do? My dad, who's pushing 90, he always talks about C. Everett Koop. He says, back in the day when the Surgeon General spoke, people trusted him. What, you know, my dad talks about that. But at the same time, my dad, who had COVID and is as healthy as a horse, but he did not get the he refused to get vaccinated with the COVID shot. So here's somebody who has trusted the government his whole life, talks about C. Everett Koop back in the day, but did not.
I remember and I knew, and it was quite a figure,
But did not trust enough to get an emergency approved vaccine. So where do we go from here?
So I think we have a couple of steps to take. I'll just tell you some simple ones. First, my doctor friends and science friends need to do a better job training people to communicate about science to the public. CDC, other government agencies, NIH, did not do a good job during COVID, and many people went to, let's just say, alternative sources of information, often which were full of nonsense, a lot of disinformation. Bad communication. C. Everett Koop was a master at communication. He did. He was wonderful. But as much as I liked some of the doctors who tried to be online or in the mainstream media, they weren't particularly effective. That has to be fixed. You need good communicators. Secondly, you need trusted communicators. I would say let's train the next generation of young people to talk about, let's say, COVID or pandemics or vaccines. My suggestion, Don, get those people to visit the high school, the 4-H club, the church, the talk radio station locally. Let's get them out there. You don't just show up on CNN because the disinformation and the misinformation, well, that was getting spread at the local level. So we have to, you have to go into your community and come out of the ivory tower. Last thing, be transparent about why you believe that something is true. C. Everett Koop used to say it, and you took it on his authority because he was an impressive person. Doesn't work that way today. Not only should you say vaccines are safe, you should say, here's the five studies that prove it. Go look them up. Or here's why vaccines don't cause autism. By the way, studied about 150 times. I mean, saying we're going to study it again as the new NIH director suggested is silly and a waste of time. But where are the resources that prove it? And put them into English. Let people see what the evidence is.
Yeah, it's far, I mean, I have a niece and nephew who are autistic, and we do a lot with different organizations. And I'll just say, you know, New Jersey has one of the highest rates. Why is that? I know a lot of people study it. So I'm for the studies that can, if there's something environmentally, because with Jersey, with Jersey, you think of, you do think of pollution. You wonder if there are environmental factors.
I agree. That's a it's really a suggestive thing, and I don't think the industry that's polluting is trying to encourage those studies. He said cynically.
Yeah.
So I think we need to look in that direction. But I'll tell you what's happening. You know what we're starting to be able to do? Predict autism in a baby before the baby gets shots. And we start to see that you can see that this child has a high risk of autism, and they haven't even been vaccinated with anything.
Yes.
That tells you that something else is going on.
Yeah, it's well said. And also that I think I'm pro-studies by the sense of when Cara Mia, my beautiful little niece, was born, they told Jeannie and Mike, Jeannie said, well, will our daughter be able to say, I love you? And I'll get choked up in a minute, but they said, no, we're sorry that she'll not. Well, they've worked with her. She's amazing. She loves Taylor Swift concerts. She knows all the words. And our whole thing in the family is, love you, Cara, love you, you know, because that's what they were told couldn't happen. So maybe some of the studies, if they do them on the kids, it'll bring forth awareness. You know what I mean?
One political note, in addition to seeing, and I've seen what you've seen, some parents working around the clock with good help, really get these kids to, you know, that are at the tough end of the autism spectrum to do better. And we know that that can happen, but not every kid gets that.
Yeah.
So I'll be political here and just say we do need studies, but we got to watch to make sure the administration and Congress do not make cuts for the disabled. I'm worried that as they're slashing around and chainsawing, they could hurt the budget that the disability people depend upon, both Medicare and Medicaid. We got to fight for that. And patient groups and patient advocates got to really be ready to speak up there.
And it's federal law under the American for Disabilities Act. So
yeah.
So
well, you know,
recourse.
If I believed that they're going to follow the law all day long, I wouldn't worry as much. But
well, on that note, you know, when we talk about kids, we have in the news, and it's incendiary, to talk about the issue of trans. So when we think about President Trump, the day he came into office, and he said, we will have two sexes, male and female. And this was essentially, I think, to deal with mostly the issue of girls in sports. And so there are many things to parse here, Dr. Kaplan, but your take on all of this, because there are moms listening right now whose daughters, right?
Now you got my attention because this is irritating to me. I'm going to say two things here, one you asked and one you didn't. On the sexes and the gender, You can declare as much as you want that there are only two sexes and that is the end of it. That's just wrong. Science knows that's not true. It's not true in the animal kingdom. It's not true with us. There are people born with extra genes, extra chromosomes that don't fit neatly into the male or female basket. There are also hormones that matter. So a baby that's born, depending on what the mom has been exposed to, they can be a biological, quote unquote, female, but may wind up male because of what they get exposed to in utero. So there is a gray zone. It's not a big gray zone, but we can have fights about transgender people in bathrooms or who's going to compete in sports, and I'm happy to get into that. But don't make up an untruth and say there's only pink and blue. That's not true. It's just biologically not true. You can even see the same, so to speak, vague sex issues in mice and ducks and raccoons, and it's in us. So let's keep the biology straight. There are two baskets and a tweeter set, and we can argue again, you know, what do you want to do about that? And gender, you know, that's not biology. That's how you present yourself to the world, Don. Mm-hmm. So you wear a dress, you have long hair, you have certain occupations, you behave in certain ways. That's fluid. You can go either way. Again, I'm not saying you should, or I have no reason to sort of argue about what's the best way to present yourself to the world. Should you wear a beard? You don't. But gender is a lot more fluid. That's what people who do drag shows and all the rest of it are playing with, is presentation. It's not biology.
And so, Dr. Kaplan, when we talk about adults, that's one thing. But with girls, especially girls in sports, that's where it gets sticky, because we've had girls injured or girls in the locker room and there's a person with a penis naked in front of them and they're at a tender age. So
very simply on the sports issue. The big thing about sports is fair competition. If you were a man and then transitioned or for whatever reason want to play in women's sports, no. It is clear that in many sports you have an unfair advantage. It's like saying, I weigh 200 pounds and I'm going to wrestle someone who's 100 pounds. Mm-hmm. We know what that means. It's not fair. So we have weight classes. We should also have whatever prohibitions and rules are necessary to make the competition fair. Do I care if a transgender person plays in a chess tournament against women? Not much. I don't think you get an advantage there. But do I care if they're going to be playing, you know, basketball, soccer, wrestling, boxing? Yeah, I don't think it's fair. So I don't know why we can't be, you know, sort of commonsensical here. Mm-hmm. Any advantage that's unfair, including, by the way, taking steroids, which we also seem to be discouraging, prohibit it, ban it, get the classes of sports competition so that you have fair competition. Once in a while, sex doesn't matter. You know, it just doesn't. To the if you're playing checkers, I don't know that the checkers champion, it matters.
Dr. Art Kaplan, we have to end it there. Hope you come back. Hope we continue the conversation.
Oh, I love you.
Have a great Friday.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.